All right, week two of Love Revolution. We started this series last week, for those of you who weren't here. And we basically started by answering some of the questions you saw there in that bumper. We talked about how for some reason the church, and if you're a guest and you're like, I'm not a part of the church, you actually get to enjoy this part. You get to be like, yeah, you guys do this. The church has kind of gotten to this place where we want to win a lot, right? We want to be right. We will try to point out other people's faults. We try to stamp out injustice. We try to stamp out evil. And the problem with that is we've gotten to be known more for what we're against than what we're for. And so last week what we did is we kind of looked at two people I think we as the church can hold up as heroes and models: Jesus, the Son of God, the author of our faith, and Paul. Paul was basically the first church planter in the New Testament. He started a bunch of churches. He wrote about half the New Testament. And what we did is we kind of looked at those two guys and how they went about spreading the truth that they knew. And what we found out is that they did a lot of things differently than the modern day church does. You know, whereas the modern day church seems to me a lot of times to be all about making a point, being right. That's why we boycott things and we protest things and we organize rallies about things and we put things in our Facebook status and we forward emails about if you believe this and you love Jesus, you'll forward this to 10 people and then you'll be blessed. That's not true. But that's kind of how we've gotten. And if you're a guest today, I'm sure you could rattle off 10 things right now that you know the church is against. But see, as we looked at Jesus and Paul last week, what we discovered is Jesus and Paul never made a big deal about what they were against. If anything, what they did, what they put forward as the most important thing, was connecting with people that they disagreed with so that they could share Jesus with them. And what we learned is that was because Jesus and Paul, they actually wanted to make a difference. And I challenged you last week to begin to wrap your brains around this concept of what if the church really could be known more for what we're for our love, for our actions, for our good deeds, rather than being known for what we hate, what we are against. And see, what I want to do this week is I kind of want to pull back a little bit further on that idea. This idea that you're more effective if you're nice to people. This idea that you're going to be more effective if you actually try to connect with them on a real level rather than just go on TV and say how evil they are and how much you hate them. Right? Because when you step out of church and you just step back to like a human nature level, I think we would all say, well, duh. Of course that works better. Of course it works better to be nice to people. Of course it works better to treat people with respect and with dignity and to try to actually communicate with them. We all learned that when we were kids, right? We all learned to be nice to people when we were kids. How many of your parents ever told you this or you heard it somewhere that you catch more flies with honey, with vinegar? You ever heard that? I always wonder, who are these people catching flies? Why are they catching flies and can I make them stop? But if you're not familiar with it, the concept is this. The concept is it's easier to persuade people if you use polite arguments, if you use flattery rather than being confrontational. It's why when we were children, our parents taught us to ask nicely, right? Right, my kids ask stuff all the time. I'd be like, ask again. And you better ask nicely this time. I didn't say it nicely to them, but I'm the dad, so they're. But right, we want our kids to ask nicely because we understand that matters. Husbands, you've all, or boyfriends or whatever, you've all heard your significant other look at you and say, it's not what you said, it's how you said it. Right? Some of you must have said that this morning because that got some tension when I said that. It's not what you said, it's how you said it. And we get this. We get the idea that what we have to communicate is greatly influenced by how we communicate it. Right? This is a human nature thing. And for most of us, we experience it more on the receiving end. Right? You've all been in a store shopping. For some reason, this typically happens in a clothing store. You're in a clothing store, and one of two things is going to happen. You're going to get the good salesperson who's going to walk up. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Yeah, we have a couple of us today. If you have any questions, just let me know. I'll be over here. And then they actually leave you alone. Or you're going to have, and I have some friends in the room that are salesmen, so I'm going to make fun of you today. You have the super salesman, right? You have the people that are all up on you. Every outfit you looks amazing. When you're like, this does not look good. There's no way this looks good. That looks fantastic. And it's always the last one, and the sale ends tomorrow, right? And they just keep coming after you, begging you and begging you and begging you to sell. They keep to close you. Nobody likes to be closed. In the history of the world, has anybody ever left a situation and felt, well, that felt good. I'm so glad they closed me today. No. But it happens. It just happens. When you buy a car, Sorry, car salesman friends. I love you. But man, buying a car is no fun. I mean, literally, buying a car, it's like going to war. Like, the last time I actually bought a car was in 2003. That's the last time I bought a car. And, I mean, I got myself jacked up. I think I listened to like some Metallica, Inner Sandman, before I got out of my car, and I just walked in, and I was just ready to go, and they started asking me, how can I help you today? No, this is what I want. I mean, what do we have to do to get you this car today? Give me this price. Like, I had it all, I did all my research. It was like combat, and I had won. But the last time I bought a car was 2003. It's not a good growth model, salesman. But you've experienced it, or maybe you've been talked into taking a timeshare tour. That one got some reaction. I got some timeshare folks here too. Love you guys. But right, you've been in the timeshare tour where, man, like, I used to have a buddy who used to sell timeshare, and literally he said, my goal is to get him to sign. I do whatever it takes to get him to sign. Whatever I have to do. He no longer sells timeshare, by the way. But that's what he did, because he could make a lot of money churning people out and closing them. Now, you groan when I said timeshare. You groan when you think about going to buy that car. Now, why is that? That's because that experience is so bad. It's so confrontational, but that's just the way they've decided to do it. Now, there are a few of you in the room who might say this. You might say, no, Trey, no. I got a guy. I have a guy. I bought my last four cars from him because he's awesome. He actually listens to me. He lets me ask questions. He actually gives me the real price, not the fake price that they're going to negotiate down from. He actually the other day let me go home and think about it and ask my wife. He was cool with that. He's a friend of mine. We have a good relationship, and so I go back over and over and over. If you found one of those people, I recently found a mechanic like that. And no, I will not give you his name because I don't want him to be too busy when my car broke down. Remember I told you I bought my last car in 2003. It's starting to die. But see, those people have gotten the concept of selling, right? They understand that selling is more about a relationship. It's more about connecting than it is closing. Because if they can connect with you, if they can have an emotional interaction with you, then you're going to come back again and again and again to buy from them. It's actually a better model. It takes more work. The closers are just lazy. It's harder to be a connector that way. But that's what they do. Now, many of you know this. My father is a businessman in the area. He is a State Farm insurance agent, like a good neighbor. Hey, somebody clap for it. Awesome. I believe my father to be one of the greatest salesmen I've ever known. I really do. The man can sell anything. He's been selling me for 30 years. He gets me to do things. But the man can sell. And it's because he gets this concept. And he actually taught me a great deal about this concept, about connecting with people, about being nice to people to get what you want. Let's just call it what it is. It's being nice to people to get what you want. My father taught me a lot about this concept, but it's not so much about selling. It was more when I'm the customer, but I still have to convince the company that I pay to do what I want. And you've all experienced it. It's when you call that dreaded 1-800 number, when you call customer service, when you wait in line at the airport, right, to talk to the customer service specialist. My father taught me an amazing lesson about how to get what I want in that situation. Because what I would do, and what I'm sure more of you do than are going to admit, is I'd call up the number. Representative. Representative! Sure, and then they connect you. And then, for 30 minutes, they proceed to tell you how important your call is to them. It's so important that we're going to put you on hold for 30 minutes. And so, after the 100th time you hear them tell you how important your call is, you're about ready to hurt somebody. And so this innocent person answers the phone. Hello, may I have your name? How can I help you today? And what I would do is I would say, how can you help me today? I'll tell you you can help me today. And I would just unload on this person all the anger that I had built up for a week. Because that was a great idea, right? But you know what I did? I made a point. She knew exactly why I was calling. I didn't make much of a difference. I was finding I didn't get much response. I didn't get much help in those situations. And finally, my father, son, I'd like to talk to you. No, he didn't say that. He's never said that in his life. He said, Trey, come here. He said, how'd that work out? This happened one time. We were coming off from Texas, and an airline that will remain nameless that's out of Atlanta rhymes with Pelta lost our bags. And after they had canceled my flight, actually, to Myrtle Beach, I had to fly into Charleston and drive up for my sister's wedding. They lost our bags. And I lost it on the lady on the phone. I just lost it on her. I just did. And my dad was like, dude, that was ridiculous. I was like, yeah, but I feel better. And she knows I'm angry. And he was like, who cares that she knows you're angry? Do you think she's going to do anything to help you when she hangs up the phone? She just sent your bags to the Ukraine. They're gone. You are never getting those bags back as long as you live. And he said, now listen, son. You are like the 100th person she's talked to today that's angry with her for a mistake she did not make. Why don't you try to be the one person that's nice to her? I was like, yes, Father, you're right. I know. And I began to watch my dad as he did this. And it's amazing. It really is. At restaurants, at airports, on the phone with customer service people, when he gets that human, first thing he does, well, hi there, so-and-so. This is Bobby Kelly. How's your day going? Probably not a good day, I know. Well, hey, I'm sure sorry about that. I know this isn't your fault. I know you can do everything you can to help me. So let me tell you about my problem. And those people go insane. I mean, they're just like, well, Mr. Kelly, well, I mean, people call him back to see if they can help. They go by the next day to check up. Mr. Kelly, I was calling to just check up on you, make sure everything was okay. Honestly, sir, I just got yelled at for 30 minutes, and I just need somebody to talk to. No, that's never happened. That's never happened. It's never happened. That'd be funny, though, wouldn't it? But he does. He treats them with dignity. He treats them with respect. A little smile, a little niceness goes a long way. And so, because I'm a smart person and I'll learn, I've adopted this for myself. I now try to go out of my way with the customer service people to be nice to them. And lo and behold, I get more of what I want. It's amazing. In fact, at the airport, I'll watch the ticket counter. And I'll wait for that jerk to go up there. And I'll watch him rail on that lady. When that happens, boom, I'll run, man. I'm running up and I'm right behind him. I'm even looking at her. I'm just going. He's not. We don't all think you're dumb. We don't. Yeah, can I get you anything? And while I'm up there, it's like, oh, and just, this isn't a big deal, but do you have any exit row seats left? We sure do. You're so nice. Now, I'm not telling you guys anything new. The reason you're laughing is because you get it. You've experienced it on both ends. You've experienced people trying to get you to do something by either being nice about it or being confrontational. You've experienced in your business life or through other people about how it works better for you. Now, you still may be asking, okay, but what? Why are we talking about this in church? Well, here's why. Because that's exactly what Paul did. Because that's exactly what Jesus did. Jesus, the smartest man that ever lived. The man that understood humanity better than anybody else. The man who loved humanity more than anybody else. The man who wanted the best that could ever be possible for humanity. Had a message for them that he had to get to them. That guy understood this concept. And he thought it so important that on the night before he was killed, he was hanging out with his followers, with his closest tight-knit group. And he made this a priority to talk about. This concept of how you treat people matters. The night is, it was a Thursday evening. It's called the Last Supper. It's very popular in pop culture. There's been movies made about it. There's been books made about it. There's an entire book about the painting of it, whatever. This is the night where, if you've heard the story, Jesus washed his disciples' feet. And that takes on a whole new connotation when you realize they always wore sandals and they didn't have running water and they walked on dirt roads where animals had walked. You do the math. And he washed their feet. And they had a meal together. They shared a meal that Christians have taken throughout the centuries called communion. This night ended with him leaving the room and walking to his favorite place to pray, where he prayed to God and prepared his heart for what was about to happen. And he then was arrested, beaten, and murdered. And these guys were about to experience that. They did not know that. He did. He knew what was about to happen. He knew he had to prepare them for that, and he did throughout the night. But he also knew everything changed now. From this point forward, they have to move past following me to leading others. They have to take what I've done and take it and go forward, because they're the ones that are going to actually change the world. See, this is what Jesus knew. And with all that in mind, what Jesus says, and what he decides to make a big deal that night, I want to read it to you. From John 13, after they've done eating, he kind of gathers them all up, and they start chatting, and then it kind of gets a serious tone, falls over the evening, and Jesus says this, verse 13, verse 34, he says, "So now I am giving you a new commandment, love each other." And then he throws this little nugget in, "Just as I have loved you, you should love each other." Now, the first thing you need to notice is that was probably a weird thing for the disciples to hear, because it says, "I'm giving you a new commandment." Well, this wasn't new. Jesus had talked about loving other people his entire 3-year ministry. He had been asked questions before, "What's the most important commandment?" And he said, "Love God and love other people." So he had said, this is the most important thing you can do. He had said it over and over and over. So there must have been a reason this night why he says it and why he says it in this way. And what I think he was doing is, I think he was just kind of say, now listen, guys, I know we've talked about this. I know I've said this is important, but I really need you to hear me. Like, I really need you to lock in for a second. It's like when you're kids and you're like, I need you to turn off the 3DS for 1 second. Please, just give me your undivided attention. Or husbands, when your wife say, turn off the television, that's when you know it's serious. Really, I can't just pause it? Like, I have to turn it off? Maybe that's just me. But no, Jesus says, guys, hear me. Hear me. This is crucial. This is the most important thing I'm going to say to you tonight. It's a new commandment. Love each other. And then he sets the bar like I've loved you. Not like your friends have loved you. Not like even your family loves you. Jesus says, like I have loved you. I have never turned my back on you. I have never held it against you when you did things to me that you shouldn't have done. I just washed the feet in this room of one man who was going to leave. And actually, by this point, he'd already left and was going to go sell out Jesus. He had just washed the feet of a man who that night said, Jesus, if everybody else leaves you, I got your back, dude. And Jesus goes, are you kidding me? You're going to deny me 3 times tonight. And he did. 3 times, Peter, when confronted with the reality of who Jesus was, said, I don't know who that guy is. No way, man. I'm not with him. I'm not a follower of his. These are the people. And Jesus, knowing all that, still served them. He still washed their feet. He still believed in them. And he says, that way is how you're called to love other people. And then Jesus drops a bomb that tells us why this was so urgent, so important to him, that he would reiterate it right now. Verse 35. He says, your love for one another will prove to the world that you're my disciples. He says, your ability to love like I love, that is what's going to prove to the world that you are my disciples. That is what's going to prove to the world that Jesus is real. That is what's going to prove to the world that God is real. That is what is going to draw the world to God. I mean, this is Jesus, okay? He could have said anything he wanted to in that moment. He was God. He could have decided. He could have said, hey guys, here's the deal. I need you to really pray up a lot because your miracles, that's what's going to convince the world that I'm real. Because those dudes could do miracles. Peter could literally touch a dude in healing. He could. The apostles could do real miracles. I don't know about you, but that's pretty convincing to me. But Jesus said, no, that's not it. That's not how you're going to prove yourself. Most of these guys were amazing speakers. They could deliver passionate speeches. They could deliver sermons. They were intelligent. The Holy Spirit had gifted them with an understanding of the Scriptures. They could have debated people. They could have won the arguments logically. They could have done that. But Jesus didn't say, by your smartness and your ability to win arguments, that's how they're going to know you're my disciples. Jesus didn't say that. Jesus didn't say, by your ability to organize and rally and enforce your will on culture, by your ability to gain political power, by your ability to gain influence in an area, that's how the world's going to know you're my disciples. Because again, this is God. Do you really think if God didn't want that to be the thing, he couldn't have said, hey, here's the deal. I want you guys to all go out and get some suits, because you have to wear a suit. And I want you to all run for public office, and I'm going to make sure you all win, and then you'll be in charge, and then we'll make everybody follow Jesus, and it'll be great. That's what God could have done. He's God. He easily could have done that. But that's not what he did. What Jesus says, he says, make sure that you love people. Because that is what's going to stand out. That is what's going to set you apart from the rest of the world. That is what is going to prove to the world that you follow me. The way you treat other people either proves or disproves the existence of your Savior every single day. Not because I said so, but because God said so. It's not our facts, it's not our arguments, it's not our organizational efforts. It's the way we treat other people. Now, why on earth would the God of the universe, who's all powerful, why would he say that was the standard? Why would he tell us that is how we are going to win the world over to following Jesus? Well, it's because he's God. Because he created humans. And he understands human nature. And because he understands that you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. He understands that actually going out of your way to care for someone and connect with someone is a much better medium in which to share what you want to share with them than to beat them over the head with it. And we all get this in the areas of our life where we want things. We have no problem buttering up a boss if we want a raise. We have no problem going out of our way to make a good impression at the private school where we want our kids to get into. We have no problem being really nice to that person working at the Delta counter when you want to catch the early flight. When it comes to things we